In this episode of the CG Evolution podcast, we have Garrett Tesla on the show. He's a 13-year veteran of law enforcement in California. He's also the host and creator of a great podcast called The Squad Room. He talks about personal development and leadership for first responders all around the world. During his service, Garrett has been a patrol officer. He worked in community service, gang enforcement, investigations, court services. And in 2013, he was promoted to sergeant. You're going to love this episode. Garrett Tesla on the show. Welcome, my brother.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be here.
Well, thank you for coming on, buddy. I know you're busy and you got a lot of stuff going on. You're on the job. You got a great podcast. Anything else you want to tell the listener that they might not know about Garrett?
They might not know about me. Well, one thing that usually piques people's interest that kind of throws them for a loop that I talk about sometimes is that this is actually a second career for me. Before this, I was working in the music and film industry. And for most of my early 20s and mid-20s, was working with major record labels, working with big rock bands and stuff.
Oh, my God.
So there's a little tidbit for you.
So what made you – the obvious question, Garrett, is how did you – because that's a dramatic shift. You know, I'm speaking to the choir. How did you do that shift from, you know – hobnobbing with the rich and famous to law enforcement?
Well, I joke that we often deal with the same people, just in a different capacity.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Rock stars are not unlike some of our populations. But, you know, I was working in New York City, and then I got an offer to come out to Los Angeles to start a record label for a film studio there, or help start a record label. And never thought I'd live in Los Angeles, much less ever join law enforcement. But through my time in living in LA, I lived right on the border of LA County Sheriffs and LAPD. And so I got to interact with them a little bit as the victim of crime, and then watching my neighbors, and then coming out of New York City and having lived there right before 9/11, that had a huge impact on me. Yeah. And so, as it did on, you know, many people in our generation. So after 9/11, and I'm sitting there in the film and music industry going like, what am I doing with myself? You know, I'm not really contributing anything and furthering the cause. And something about, you know, there's a lot of ways to go into service. I was drawn into service, of course, the military or the fire service or the EMS. But to me, it was watching the law enforcement personnel, and how they held themselves and how they interacted and how they stepped up and were at the front line of that fight early there in 2001, 2002, here at home. That really inspired me to start learning about it and doing some ride-alongs. And I went to a Citizens Academy and had this grand idea that I'd be a reserve officer and that I'd like be Batman, right? And I'd have my day job, you know, in the music industry, and then at night I would go out and contribute some hours on a reserve basis, but really through that process determined and found that this is really what my true calling was.
And was it hard to break away from that former life? Because, I mean, I'm sure you were making a ton of money or a lot of money. And you know, Garrett, we don't get into this job to make money. You know, but I guess money is a component. It's not everything. So
it's not everything. You know, yeah. I talk sometimes about, I was getting a good financial salary for sure in music, and you know, was on a track. I was expecting. I left when I was about 28 years old, and I was expecting to make vice president the next year, and would, you know, within the next decade after that would be pulling down serious money.
Yeah.
But that's my financial salary. I wasn't getting a psychological salary, and is the idea that I never have had a shift in all of my time. Coming up on 14 years now, I've never had a shift where I had to wonder if I did good work that day or that I had an impact on someone in a positive way. And some days it's obvious and it's tangible and it's right in front of me. And other days it's just the simple fact that I put on my gun belt and my vest and I went out and someone saw my car and thought, all right, they're around and I know I'm safe if they're here. right? Somebody somewhere, they didn't tell me this, but I just know that our presence does that. And so that's the psychological salary I get out of this.
Yeah, and I love it. And first of all, thank you for your service.
Likewise.
And it really is amazing. I wish there were, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there like you who, after 9/11, it impacted them so, and they got into service, but in some regard, military, law enforcement, fire, whatever. But you don't see a lot of that anymore, do you, Garrett, where you're at out in California? I mean, do you see people, you're in touch with, different, the young people and the millennials and all these people are going to take our place. I mean, it doesn't seem like there's a rush to serve that much anymore.
You know, it's not as I think the obligation or the desire to serve is still there. Mm-hmm. It's just that we have thinned the herd, so to speak, in terms of who we are appealing to.
Yeah.
When I got hired on, it was a fight to get hired, and they were taking like 1% of us, and you were lucky to get a call back, and it was very competitive. You know, it was also considered to be a very good job, a very steady job, a very reliable job, right? And through, events that have been covered in the media and some very loud voices, I think we have scared away a lot of people that would otherwise do have a great career. Mm-hmm. But they want to serve, but they don't want to serve in such harsh conditions, So we need to be better about telling our story with our recruits and the people we're looking to in terms of what they can gain from the job. And I think we would be back to those numbers, because when I work with like younger kids, and I say kids, but I mean like guys coming in their first year on the job, they're as passionate and motivated about serving in the job and defending the rights and constitution and freedoms of all people that, mm-hmm. that I was, ages ago, and that the people before me were. Mm-hmm. So it's motivating for me to work with those people. I love working with the younger guys because they're still there, but we just have to tap into, again, that psychological salary that they get from it. And yeah. I think our numbers would come back up.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's hard because you hit on it, that I think it's hard now, because when I first got into law enforcement, Garrett, kind of like when you did, there's always bad press in the media about law enforcement, and we need to be under the microscope. I mean, we have a very important job. We can... tremendous power. So it's not about being under the microscope. I think we all know that we are, and we should be. But we didn't have the media like we do today, where there's such a... I mean, I think there's a lot. I think there's a ton of police support out there, law enforcement support, criminal justice support. I wish they were more vocal. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking at, because I see the same thing you do, and we have a lot of young officers. They're amazing people. And we don't have a lot of difficult time recruiting. It's just that if I know if I was a college student coming out, I would look at the media and say, well, why do I want that? I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, yeah, I want to serve. I want to serve my country and serve my community. But my God, every time you turn around, there's some anti-police thing going on. And it wasn't there before.
It wasn't, no. But we also have to, I think, acknowledge that it goes both ways, and mm-hmm. that we have, through social media, mm-hmm. have been able to develop these echo chambers where we even exponentially blow these things out of proportion. Mm-hmm. So where there may be, I'm in California, and maybe there's a negative coverage of something in Phoenix, right? Not my jurisdiction at all, not something I deal with, but it gets shown on social media, and it gets bounced around all the cop websites and all the cop forums and all that sort of stuff. And it just perpetuates a bit of that echo chamber that is, like we're looking for the proof that the media is out to get us. And then, so we go looking for it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And well, so we got to be careful about, I think about, buying our own press release sometimes,
No, I agree. And I think it helps when there's forums out there, your podcast, my podcast, there's other criminal justice podcasts out there that are trying to educate people and kind of, talk about the issues and talk about the topics. And that helps, I think.
It does. And I the way I phrase it to my audience is that you need to fight in the shade.
Yeah.
And it goes to the story of a story from the Battle of Thermopylae, right? The famous Battle of the 300. And how one of the runners came up to King Leonidas and complained that the Persians had so many archers that when they launched their arrows, that they would darken the sky. And Leonidas replied, "Good, then we shall fight in the shade."
I love it. Yeah, I love it. And it's such a great analogy.
Thank you. So to me, that story is just a perfect example of what we should expect and then be okay with it. Accept it as the conditions that we work in and understand that the vast majority of people still do support us. And even the vast majority of the media do. Mm-hmm. Drama and crisis sells. I've never watched a newscast where they started the newscast, with, today in breaking news, nothing happened.
It's a good point.
Something has to be there to drive the drama. And it's a story. We tell stories, right? And newscasters tell stories just like anybody else. And that's why I often talk like we need to be good about telling our story so that we can combat it when the time comes when they do come looking for us.
Yeah. And I think, too, that, now is not a time. And I do think it's gotten better with support for law enforcement last couple of years. But this is a time, too, where, in my opinion, we need to be out in the communities more, engaging with the communities, talking to the communities, because it's a collaboration, man. We can't do it alone.
Yeah. If you're – I say this sometimes. If your department has a community-oriented policing division or unit, then you've failed. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm just saying that from the sergeant level, and there's – obviously intricacies that go into that, but your community-oriented policing needs to be your entire ethos.
Exactly. From the time,
right? And so many people I've talked to have departments where it's, three or four officers, and they're the ones who go out and do those things, but the rest of the department doesn't buy into that because they haven't been taught why it's important, Mm-hmm. I used to be a community resource deputy, which was just exactly that. There were like three of us for the entire half a million people that we cover, right? And I jokingly called it the arts and crafts division because I was the only one out there doing stuff and interacting. It has to be an ethos that everyone buys into.
Well, and I agree with you 100%, and it has to start at the top because, if it doesn't start at the top, it doesn't get filtered down. You know what I mean? I mean, you're going to have people that might disagree and stuff like that. But to speak from my example, everybody in the organization in my organization believes that, and it makes it easier.
And that's great. And then it makes it easier because implementing that from the middle in both directions is not going to work real well, or from the bottom up is not going to work real well.
Mm-hmm. Let's switch gears a little bit. I mean, what do you think? There's so many issues out there. In California, you've got, you're not immune to the opiate epidemic like everybody else is. What do you think some of the challenges we're going to face in the future are going to be?
Well, yeah, you're certainly touching on a big one right there.
Yeah.
So just the kind of calls we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I see, too, and not to be like the old codger, but it's this general abdication of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be careful not to just say, oh, it's these new kids aren't the new generation, but but this idea that we are owed something by the simple fact that we exist. And I think we all see this on calls where and it goes to this kinds of ideas of the safe spaces on college campuses and that sort of stuff where we're not comfortable interacting and we're not comfortable interacting with people that are different from us. And this goes to cops too. But our ability to communicate and acknowledge each other as, first of all, fellow citizens and human beings first, right? Before we start getting into what divides us or what is different about us.
Mm-hmm.
We seem to always go first towards what divides us. And again, that goes to cops too, but, I see those things big picture being real problems as we, the next 5-10 years that are going to challenge us in our environments.
Mm-hmm. What about mental health issues? I'm sure you have a ton of them where you're at, Garrett. I know in Colorado, and speaking for my jurisdiction, my agency, I mean, when I first got in law enforcement, probably when you did, we weren't getting called to all these people that were in crisis mentally. Now it seems like every day. So I know in my area, in my jurisdiction, it's a question about resources too. How is it where you're at in Santa Barbara?
It's something we've been dealing with as a state for a long time. In the 80s, mm-hmm. late 70s or so, they shut down most of the state mental health hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a flood of mentally ill and people in crisis coming out onto the streets. And so it's been something that I've dealt with here since the very beginning of my career. You know, you mentioned I'm in Santa Barbara, and I always describe Santa Barbara to people as a boulder by the sea. And we have a lot of social programs and stuff like that that attract a large homeless population. And, of course, homeless population brings with them a lot of mental health issues.
True.
But you touched on something. When I started, I had really no grasp of how pervasive mental illness was, even in your general population, people who function on a day-to-day basis but who are struggling with some mental health issue, mm-hmm. and how so many people are just one bad day away from snapping.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes they snap. But so, you know, we got crisis intervention training probably 7-8 years ago now. When we first rolled it out, we're rolling it out on a much more thorough basis. We've developed a mental health response team, mm-hmm. that's a combination of officers and a psychologist who work with the like most at-risk populations and try and get them some help. And they follow like a restorative justice kind of model.
Yeah.
So it's something we're always adapting to. I never thought, as a law enforcement officer coming into a job, I was going to be chasing bad guys and hooking and booking. I had no idea how much of my time would be spent dealing with people in crisis. So, yeah.
And it's unfortunate, and it's the reality of it. And I'm a believer, the more I do this and the more I see what's going on, that we can't just keep locking people up. Now, some people belong in jail. I think you and I agree with that, or most people. But it's a revolving door. They go in there, they get medicated, they're stable. Not everybody, but some of them. They get released, they can't afford their meds, bam, right back in, you know, into whatever they were doing.
100%. And any cop with any amount of time on is head of call where, like, yeah, you've got some real mild misdemeanor, but you got to solve the problem.
Yeah.
And so you're legally able to take them to jail. So the first thing you do to get rid of, solve that problem is to just put them in custody, which, of course, long term exacerbates the situation and costs more money and those are, but the poor line level patrol officer doesn't have a whole lot of tools on their tool belt.
Exactly.
And it's all about resources and money and where our priorities are.
Yeah, it's definitely something that we as a law enforcement community, along with help from the citizens, we have to get a grasp on this, because it's not going away.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that this only comes up to the public's level of sight when something tragic happens, when someone in crisis provokes a violent response from law enforcement.
Yeah.
And there's that poor cop, his hands are tied in a situation. And that's unfortunately the only way we often highlight these things with the public.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Very good. Switching gears yet again there, sir. Talk about your podcast. You have an amazing podcast out there called The Squad Room. And talk about that.
Oh, thanks. I've been doing it for, I started in 2015, and it really was about my own personal struggles dealing with the stress of the job. Mm-hmm. By that point, I'd had just about 10 years on. I had a couple years under my belt as a sergeant, and realized I wasn't dealing with the stress well. I wasn't sleeping well. I was getting labeled with all these sleeping disorders.
Like most of us have, or some of us.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I kept having to exchange my Sam Brown for a bigger gun belt and a bigger one,
yeah.
and, you know, not fitting into my uniform. And, like, man, I got to do something. And so it really was the process started before I ever hit record, where I started learning some things, trying some things, finding some things that were effective, finding the right coaches for me. And as I would share some of these things in briefing with my squad, I'd get pulled aside by people at work who would express that, hey, you know, I'm struggling with this too, or my sleep is bad. What did you try? And I realized that if I'm having these problems, my partners are having these problems.
Mm-hmm.
And if my partners are having these problems, then other people are having these problems. And kind of, you know, this will sound corny, but I took it as my obligation to share some of this with an audience to this information out, so that
not corny at all, by the way.
Well, so thank you. So some cop in Maine or Florida or Australia even, or somewhere like that, who's dealing with these things, who doesn't know where to turn, who doesn't know where to start, could come to the show and say, come to my show and say, look, this is a guy who's not an expert. He's not the guru. He's not the guy who's selling you on his program. He's trying to go out and find the best processes that work for him and then kind of report back. Mm-hmm. And I love podcasts in general. I listen to a ton of them, and it kind of filled or scratched that niche of creativity that I was lacking. Mm-hmm. And thought, well, you know, if I have a podcast, I wonder if I can get these really subject matter experts onto the show to talk at length, and I can learn from them and then share the information. And so luckily that's been able to happen. And so it really did start as me being the guinea pig for my own transitions and being very honest and open to an embarrassing level about struggles with weight management and diet and nutrition and drinking too much and the mental stress of it and how do we deal with and how do we develop some mindfulness practices and sort of thing. So that's really was what I wanted to start it for. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I've kind of have now added to that through the course of several years is not only just reporting back, but now being able to teach some of the things I've learned.
Sure.
While also with a full disclaimer that I am still in my own process, right? Yeah. I am not the guy on the top of the mountain.
Oh yeah.
Preaching these things. I am still climbing that mountain with everybody else, but here are some things I've learned. And then my real passion is about helping to develop the next generation of leaders within law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And my belief that regardless of whether it's your first day on FTO and you're the brand new rookie out of the academy, or you just put in your application to become an officer, or you are a captain or commander or chief, or you're retired, this group of people that we have the skills, knowledge, and training and abilities and the background to be the leaders that our country needs. And so we have an obligation to be leaders in everything we do. And so I call it thin line leadership because it goes to all the other emergency services as well, the other first responders. But talking and really bringing people on who can help us become the best leaders we can possibly be.
Yeah. And it is so, I mean, I love it. I mean, and I tell people, because I talk about some of the same things in my show, and I love it. I mean, you just mentioned mindfulness along with other, you know, very important topics. Garrett, if you would have told me 5 or 6 years ago that I would be practicing meditation right now,
right,
every morning for at least 10 minutes, sometimes more, but at least a minimum of 10 minutes, I would have laughed at you and said, are you kidding? I'm not doing that crap.
Right.
That is so important. Obviously, physical fitness, eating right, you know, I mean, all that stuff is so important. And that's what I wish. I'm glad you're talking about it on your show. Look, it's okay to tell war stories every once in a while. And my premise is kind of like your premise in the podcast. We talk about the issues, and that's good. But you also need to talk about mindfulness and how to take care of yourself mentally, spiritually, whatever. Because those are the things that are going to keep you in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And that game being your entire life.
Exactly.
Right? It keeps you involved with your family and your loved ones, your career, knowing where you're going in your career and where you want to go.
Yeah.
You know, take ownership of that. So, and it doesn't have to be meditation either. I wish I was better at it.
Mm-hmm.
It's practice. I was telling someone this the other day. Like, there's no such thing as perfect meditation, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a practice, just like anything else. For me, journaling has become very important to me. I find that I get my thoughts out onto paper, and then they're out of my head, and then I can free up that cognitive space. But you know, I was describing that I was in a class recently, and I raised my hand and said meditation is really important, and I was explaining all the benefits of this, and again these are things I've learned and tried through our guests and this you know, big burly, very salty cop from a real gnarly part of Los Angeles grabs me at the break and pulls me aside, and he's like, so I want to try it, and how do I start?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, and you know, well, here's your options. You know, like I suggested Headspace to him.
Yeah.
I have what started as kind of my co-host. We did an intro to meditation episode, and he does a guided meditation. So yeah, it's cool. People are actually starting to think about these things, and they're open to them.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's so important for, like you said, it's so important for the next generation, succession planning. Somebody is going to be taking my place, your place, and more power to them. But we need to give them the right tools, obviously leadership, how to take care of yourself. Because, again, this is the stuff. I mean, I learned a lot of stuff and my important things in my career. But I wish people were talking about this, Garrett. when I was going through the academy, look, okay, you know how to shoot, you know how to drive, you know how to hook somebody up. That's great. But let's talk about how to take care of yourself spiritually, mentally. I get it with curriculums. There's only so much. But I wish there was somebody that would have pulled me inside and said, dude, you need to do this to, you know, keep your mind right. You know, you need to eat right. You know, and they were out there probably. I mean, and that was another thing. I probably didn't seek it out. But I wish that we would have talked about more when I was coming through. You know what I mean? And coming up in the ranks and throughout my career.
You know, absolutely. And it used to not be acceptable stuff to talk about. You know,
yeah. You can't talk about that.
You managed it. You dealt with it, and then of course it just exploded when you had a heart attack at the age of 45.
Yeah.
You know? But I think too, some of this in a weird way, we've been lucky to be working during a time where we're at war. And we are getting a lot of attention. The special operations community gets a lot of attention.
Yeah,
and they're the first to try anything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I've had sports psychologists on the show who work with special ops. And when you got a guy who's like a Navy SEAL saying like I meditate every morning and I journal and blah blah blah, then the cops, even the most hardened cops, are like, well, if a guy from SEAL Team 6 is willing to try it, I guess it's worth a shot.
Yeah.
You know, so there's some validation coming from outside of the community too, that from other warrior class archetypes that it works.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. So if you were, I mean, I'm sure you've gotten this. I mean, I know I have, but if you were going to give advice to somebody out there that's on that cusp, that's, you know, looking at maybe starting their own show, a podcast, what advice would you give them?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I guess the one thing I really try to focus on and that I would tell anybody is make sure you're authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And that whatever position you're taking or whatever your identity is that you want it to be, make sure that it's yours. You know, and people respond to the authenticity. I never expected people to listen to the show outside of my mother and maybe some friends. So it's been nice to see that. But whenever I get the biggest response to an episode, it's because I'm being the most honest and most authentic.
Yeah.
And even the most like vulnerable, which, you know, is not easy for any cop to do, myself included.
Yeah.
But people respond to that, you know?
Yeah. I agree 100%. 100%. What's next for Garrett?
Well, it's funny you say that because I'm waiting for a call to get called out for evacuations for a potential flood.
Oh, jeez. Well, please be careful if that happens and take care of yourself. I meant like down the road a little bit. Book deal. You know, keep rocking it with the podcast.
I'm excited about 2019 because 2018 had a lot of interesting things happen in my career. 2018, we had a massive mudslide here in Santa Barbara called the debris, but killed 23 people and wiped up hundreds of homes. And I spent most of the first part of 2018 knee deep in that situation.
Yeah.
And then as a result of that, got asked to do a TED talk about it. And so I spent a lot of the last part of the year rehearsing and preparing and then giving a TED talk on my experience interacting with the citizens during that. And so I'm excited for 2019 to be able to kind of refocus on the podcast itself and just really try to put out as much good content as I possibly can for the audience. I mentioned Thin Line Leadership. We're going to be expanding on that. I introduced in a concept for self-development called BADGES, which stands for beliefs, actions, discipline, goals, emotions, and service.
Mm-hmm.
And how those 6 points of that star, that badge, are all interrelated. And if we focus on those 6 things, then we will be successful. And so we're exploring that this whole year with weekly episodes, some stuff on our Facebook group, some stuff on the mailing list. And so it's been fun to really just be able to devote a lot of time to that.
Yeah. And I saw your TED Talk, by the way. It's going to be linked up in the show notes. It's amazing for all the listeners out there. I'll have it linked up in the show notes.
Thank you. Yeah, that was quite the experience.
Yeah, yeah. Well, is there any parting thoughts you want to give, words of advice you want to give the listeners before we leave there, sir?
Well, you should never have another podcaster on a podcast because we can pause them, right? But I'll try and keep it short. I mentioned it real briefly, but I really do believe that if you're looking at this career, if you're in this career, any first responder profession, we have an obligation to lead. And that might mean different things at different times in your life. It's a quote from my TED Talk, even day to day. But if we do what we can, then we are the ones who are going to bring our country back together.
Yeah.
And that's the same if you're listening to this in Australia or England or Canada or here. It's up to us, and I really truly believe it's up to us in the first responder professions, because no one else is coming, and it's obvious and evident in the news every day. And the only people that still get looked to for the answers and still get asked to lead are us,
yeah,
the first responders. And so we have to take that obligation seriously. We have to be prepared for it. And then as a result, we get so much more out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Such great comments, Garrett. Everybody, please check out his amazing podcast called The Squad Room. It'll be linked up in the show notes along with Garrett's TED Talk. Garrett, if people want to reach out to you, brother, how can they do that?
They can find me on Instagram and Twitter at The Squad Room. I always enjoy emails too. It's just Garrett, 2 R's, 2 T's, at thesquadroom.net. Mm-hmm. And also they can join our Facebook if they search The Squad Room podcast group on Facebook.
Garrett, much success to you, brother. Thank you for what you're doing. Please be safe. Again, anything we can do for you, please reach out to me. And again, thanks for being on the show, sir.
Likewise, man. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
All right, brother. Take care.
Folks, I hope you enjoyed this great show with Garrett. I love talking with fellow Leos. I love talking with people who have other podcasts, such as Garrett. His podcast, The Squad Room, is amazing. Again, check it out. And some of the takeaways I took from this conversation, it was all great content, but some of the takeaways, the main takeaways, is that we have to take better care of ourselves. We have to. You heard the conversation. Physically, mentally, spiritually, we have to do that in order for us to be the best we can be, not only for our communities, for our families, but for ourselves. And we have to teach this to the next generation coming up, because unless they have mentorship and coaching, they're not going to learn this. We have to take the lead and teach them that they have to put themselves, they have to take care of themselves. Not that they don't serve their communities, but again, it all starts with taking good care of oneself. The other takeaway I got from this is, as we head down the road into the future and all these challenges that we face in law enforcement, we have to continue to work with our communities. We have to get out there. We have to talk. We have to come up with solutions, or we're not going to be able to do anything. Folks, I hope you enjoyed this great show. Stay tuned for great guests and great content.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.